I've really got a problem with something. Now I can't tell you how serious I am. I'm worried about something, and I'd like to start a movement. I am very concerned about the breaking of windows. Very, very concerned. I believe it is really a bad thing to break windows. Particularly, I think it's a really bad thing to break plate glass windows. But in particularly in residential homes, people who have large windows. I might suggest the deacon's home. I'm just very concerned that some scoundrel might sneak there and break those windows that look out over the ocean in the deacon's home. And that would be a great disaster. And I think we need to go on a campaign to stop it. In fact, I would like the city council to pass a resolution about breaking of windows, and I'd like them to put it in biblical language. And the big biblical language would be this: thou shalt not break plate glass windows. Don't you think that's a really good idea? It's a passion with me. Well, you know, I'm a little bit hyperbolic this morning. I'm exaggerating. You know, okay, it's not good to break windows, especially the deacons. Well, I don't know about that second thought. Folks, I personally despise legalism. I hate it. I could not find words to describe to you how much I loathe legalism. You say, well, how come you get so excited about it? Because you really do seem serious about that. Oh, you better believe I am, because I lived under it for so many years of my life. There was nothing that we could do growing up, we being Mary Ellen and me, both of us. Nothing we could do. Everything was wrong. You couldn't smoke, drink, swear, play cards, dance, go to movies. You couldn't do anything. And I still, the most vivid thing I have is this pretty lady down here with that little turned up nose pressed against the window of her living room, watching the children across the street having an Easter egg hunt, and she couldn't go because there was a law against it in her church. You couldn't do anything. Consequently, many of the kids we grew up with tossed the whole thing. They jettisoned Christianity in general, or they just didn't even pay any attention to it. Because we had names for this. We called it the filthy five or the nasty nine, these things that we couldn't do, and they were spelled out every Sunday. I remember one of my most vivid memories, and I'm getting somewhere. This isn't just a little story. I was in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was going to a really pretty decent church where the pastor was probably the best week-by-week preacher I have ever heard in my life. Oh, he was so good. But one day, for his sermon, he brought out a fishing pole. We're talking about his sermon. I probably had about 35 or 40 college students there because I was in campus ministry, and I would bring kids to his church. His sermon was this. He had somebody have a fishing pole. And on the end of the fishing pole, naturally, there was a line and a hook. And on the hook was a deck of cards, a deck of playing cards. And his whole sermon was about why we shouldn't use playing cards. What a stupid subject. Now you say, where are you going? In the epistle, brethren, before faith came, we were confined under the law, kept in restraint until faith should be revealed. So the law was our custodian until Christ, that we might be justified by faith. But now that faith has come, we are no longer under a custodian, that's the law. For in Christ Jesus, you are all sons through faith. I'm not quite through with that epistle lesson today, but the simple fact is, before Christ came, the people of God were under the law. But when Christ came, a whole new dispensation comes. A whole new way of relating to God comes. As different in very little words between the old covenant and the new covenant. The old covenant, you had to keep all the rules. And a very good translation of that, by the way, nothing wrong with the one that's here, but a very good translation that I saw one time and even looked it up to see if it was okay. Our schoolmaster, Christward, or our scoutmaster, Christward. This custodian, it was an office. I mean, it was a job that people had in a relatively wealthy home. They hired people to raise their children. They were Old Testament nannies who did a lot of teaching. That's what St. Paul says. That's what the law was. It was our school teacher, our schoolmaster, our nanny, our custodian, that person in the home, other than the parents in this case, who were responsible for raising children. But when Christ came, the law is superseded. I'm still going somewhere. This is not just rambling. I am so weary. So weary of having a new set of laws that aren't even close to the laws that God gave in the Old Testament in the Ten Commandments. I'm so weary of it being given and that this is how we're to live, and if we don't live this way, we're just really evil and wicked people. I mean, it's just such a blatant contradiction of the Scriptures, a blatant contradiction of the teaching of the church all these centuries. I'm still going somewhere. I'm ahead in there. I grew up under it. A whole set of laws. They were the traditions of men in this case. They were just things that the whole religious environment in which we grew up. You had to keep these, and if you didn't, you were really a bad person, and you were looked down on, greatly looked down upon. I want to tell you how significant it was even. In Mama's church, where she got raised, you couldn't go to a school dance. So the church put on a program, when the high school put on a program, and you know, it ended up, they actually had more kids at the church party than they did at the school dance. Now, I didn't mind the party idea. What I minded was that so many of those kids that grew up under that confinement, I mean, it's not a law of God, for goodness sake, and I'm not even advocating the dance, but why do such a don't throw rocks through the windows thing? If you want to get the deacon's windows broken, pass a resolution, go out and evangelize. Do not throw rocks through the window. We'll get some windows broken, won't we? You know who's going to volunteer to do the deacon's window? The priest. I volunteer. All right. Here's where I'm going. We're in the Christmas fast. Don't you even think meat. Don't even let it cross your mind. This year, I'm on a campaign. See, I can still preach like that. Yes! Don't you dare smell meat. And that includes fish and chicken. Because it does. Nor dairy. Nor olive oil, nor oil or wine or beer or anything, no alcohol. Don't even think about it. And if you do, it's a big time sin. Do you know why the vast majority of the 400 million Orthodox Christians in this world don't pay any attention whatsoever to the Christmas fast? Well, there's actually two reasons. One is many of them just don't care. And the rest of them are just sick and tired. You get it thrown at you every year. And it's a don't throw rocks through the window thing. It's made such a huge deal of, oh, if you don't do this, you're not a really true Orthodox Christian. And there will be people today who stand and say, it's a sin to eat meat during Lent. For some of you, it is. St. Paul makes it very clear. If you think it is, it is. Doesn't bother you, it's not. And don't go judging each other. We have plenty of fasting cops around here. We have a lot of feasting cops, too. I'm one. But fasting cops, that's another. You say, well, Father, are you against the fast? Well, of course I'm not against the fast. Are you for it? Well, of course I'm for it. Well, Father, you're going to keep it? Yeah, after Thanksgiving. Well, why not before Thanksgiving? It's a rule. Yeah, it's a rule, but they didn't make the rule after Plymouth. They didn't make it after it became a national holiday. They didn't make it until those of us who were born in this country, and a whole lot of you who are immigrants, came to this country. They didn't make it before you came and you learned, this is just what we do. And you say, oh, the rules of the church supersede the culture. Folks, if you go back and figure out how they made these rules, how they did this stuff in the history of the church, you know that? That's a silly, stupid argument. They understood the cultures they lived in. Well, what are we going to do about this fast? Well, I'm going to keep it. There'll be a few times I don't, because I'm not going to embarrass anybody. If I'm in somebody's home and some lady cooks a nice dinner and has meat on the table, I'm going to go, oh, no, you cooked meat. I'm fasting. Lord have mercy on me and on her. I'm not going to embarrass somebody, for goodness sake. Well, what is the fast for? It's a gift. It's something that is given to you. It's a blessing from God. It's a great blessing because it's something that is given to us to help us overcome our passions. But it's not law. It's not an inviolable rule. It's not what you keep to maintain a relationship with God. It's a gift, a blessing that is given to us so that we take some mastery over our souls. Here's what the apostle says. I mean that the heir, as long as he is a child, is no better than a slave. If you're going to be under the law, folks, you're a slave. And the world's full of Orthodox slaves. Well, not too full, because you know, the people actually speak and they show with their feet and so on, even very pious Orthodox Christians. I mean, after all, they really do. They're not stupid, for crying out loud. Okay, no better than a slave, though he is the owner of all the estate, because he's going to inherit it, as long as he is under guardians and trustees until the date is set by his father. That is when he'll inherit what he's supposed to get. So with us. When we were children, we were slaves to the elemental spirits of the universe. But when the time had fully come, God sent forth his son to redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. Oh, that little passage, I want to talk about that for a moment. So with us, when we were children, we were slaves to the elemental spirits of the universe. Not a very good translation, and if you check in about 10 different translations, you'd find that's basically the only one who uses it that way, which surprises me because normally they wouldn't do that. It's a single word in the Greek language, and it just means the basic, the elemental things. It doesn't say spirits. It's an adjective, and you can stick most any noun you want in with it, but that's not a very good one to put in spirits in there because it carries a little different meaning. Okay, it's just those basic things. Well, what's the basic thing? Well, St. Paul explained all of this previously. He had explained this in Romans chapter 7. He had said, for while we were in the flesh, this is just the basic stuff. This is the do not throw rocks through the window stuff. Okay, for while we were in the flesh, that is, before we put on Christ, we were in the flesh. So says St. Paul, while we were in the flesh, the sinful passions aroused by the law were active in our bodies to bear fruit for death. And then he says, so is the law sinful? God forbid. It's not the law that's the problem. What's the problem? It's our sinful passions. But what arouses our sinful passions? Do not throw rocks through the window. Do not smell meat, dairy, or oil, or most anything. You can have motor oil. Don't do that during Christmas, Lent, the Nativity fast. Do you understand this? Was the law in the Old Testament a bad thing? It was holy, righteous, and good. What was the problem? We were the problem. But what changed the problem? We put on Christ. Now, somebody comes and lays a whole new law on us. What was St. Paul's number one problem during his lifetime? Number one problem in his preaching of the gospel to the Gentile world. Number one, it was the Judaizers who followed him everywhere he went and told the people, oh, it's a nice thing that Paul says, but he hasn't told you the whole story. The whole story is you got to have Jesus plus all the rules and the Old Testament. And that's why he spent so much time preaching against it, and that's why he writes it to the Galatians, and we read it today. Folks, the conclusion is, take this nativity fast as a blessing, as a gift. Do what you can with it. Moms and dads, do something with it at home so your children know we're in the fast season. But don't make it a law. Don't make it something rigid. Don't make it something that's going to be a burden to your family. Your children are going to be hating it. Good night. It's to help. It's a blessing. It's a gift. And the gift is given so that we can learn to deny our passions. Do you know what the easiest passion in the whole world is? Do you know what the easiest passion is to deal with? The easiest of the passions? Gluttony. It's the easiest. You start with what you put in your mouth. That's how you start to deal with your passions. You say, Father, I got a real problem with lust. I got a real problem with anger. You know what my answer normally is? Well, you need to fast. That's where you start. So, folks, we are not going to do a don't throw rocks through the window resolution. And we're not going to make the Christmas, the Nativity fast a law. What we're going to do is we're going to say, oh, Lord God, thank you for giving us this great blessing so that our lives can be encouraged and so that we can gain some strength in overcoming our passions. And we're going to look forward to your birth, and we're going to celebrate it with great joy, and we're going to give attention to it. Thank you for this blessing that you have given us.